Network, this is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
I'm Tom Rowe in Acre, and you've tuned into the WGXC Morning Show. We have a busy show for you today. We're going to hear from musician Jennifer Jackson, who's performing this afternoon at 2 p.m. at Spike's Record Rack on Main Street in Catskill, and live on 90.7 FM WGXC. We will also hear from the Turtle Man from Western Massachusetts, and we'll hear the Wave Farm Fauna and Flora report about what the animals have been doing in Acre. We'll hear the national headlines from the Public News Service and the local Better Weather from the Catskill Maker Syndicate. It all starts after the local news, which is next. Stay tuned.
Airwaves controlled. Blood. A stream runs through. This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network. This is the news.
This is Jenny.
And this is Amanda.
And we're from Dim the Lights with Jenny and Amanda.
Every second and fourth Tuesday of the month here on WGXC, Acre, Hudson, Catskill, 90.7 FM.
The Catskill Town Board meets every first Tuesday of the month at 6:30 p.m. at the Catskill Town Hall and holds a committee meeting the third Wednesday of the month at 6:30 p.m. You can turn out in person at the Catskill Town Hall to speak at these meetings or tune in to a live web stream through the Catskill Town Board and WGXC. Go to wgxc.org/listen or click on the listen button at wgxc.org to tune in to any of the Catskill Town Board meetings, the first Tuesday of the month at 6:30 p.m. and the third Wednesday of the month at 6:30 p.m. at wgxc.org and townofcatskillny.gov.
WGXC underwriting support has been provided by Dedicated Presentation Solutions. Allow DPS to turn your audiovisual how-do-eyes into here's-how-you-cans. Visit dedicatedpresentation.com or call 845-475-8465 for more information. Dedicated Presentation Solutions, your audiovisual partner.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Elizabeth Powell of Craryville, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate. Thank you for your support.
I'm Tom Rowe in Acre with the WGXC Daily News for Thursday, July 13th. Go to the WGXC newsroom at wgxc.org for more information about any of these stories. Porcupine Soup reports that Caro Republicans caucusing July 11th at Rita Bowers Resort in Round Top voted for newcomer Tim Murphy over incumbent Tim Powers 68-51. Supervisor Jason Watts was nominated for a second two-year term by just 5 votes. Watts is under criticism for telling voters they were getting a tax break when actually their property taxes were going up, with local headlines such as, quote, Caro accidentally increases property taxes by 7.5%, unquote, in the Times Union. Despite the bad headlines, Watts defeated Powers 63-58. Incumbent board member Deborah Boggins with 61 votes beat Powers with 44 votes, Victor Manola with 9, and Murphy with 5. Town Justice Tanya Sirago, Town Clerk Kayla McAllister, Tax Collector Sue Hilgendorf, and Highway Superintendent Art Evans were nominated unopposed. Voting takes place in late October and early November this year. Read more about this story in Porcupine Soup. Nancy Kern reports for Columbia Green Media that allegations of all sorts are being traded in New Baltimore recently. Harold W. Vandy III, Elaine Vosberg, and Judith Felston say that Town Supervisor Jeff Russo is not interested in their free speech, alleging he says, quote, get on with it, unquote, and, quote, this is not town business, unquote, to put an end to any discussion he does not want to hear. Felstein said, quote, the board treats members of the public condescendingly. I feel they consider public comment more of a nuisance. I don't think they have a great interest in public forum or in discussion and debate, unquote. Osberg said about the July 10th board meeting, quote, Jeff did not let Harold finish his presentation. Mr. Russo banged his gavel many times and did not allow Harold Vadney to finish. He said, quote, this is not town business, unquote. When Mr. Vadney referred to libelous remarks against current Highway Superintendent Alan Van Warmer that were published by the New Baltimore Republican Committee, unquote. Felston said, quote, at one point I was objecting to an action they'd taken with our court personnel. I was stating my position and Jeff started arguing back. Part of what he does is talk so much it blocks you. It's kind of bullying. He tries to talk you into silence and then at the end he says, well, now that's settled, when it isn't. The story does not get Russo's side, only quoting him from a statement at a town meeting about social media not being town business. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com. Kevin Frey at New York State of Politics reports that New York Democrats will attempt to coordinate their elections in 2024 after losing several seats in the House of Representatives in 2022. Senator Kirsten Gillibrand said of the cooperation, quote, it lifts up the entire Democratic brand. It helps the first-time candidates with how to get your message out, unquote. Republicans flipped the 19th congressional district in 2022 and almost won in the 18th district, too, in the Hudson Valley. Democrats lost six seats in 2022 in the House in districts won by President Joe Biden. Representative Hakeem Jeffries said they are focusing on reversing that, saying, quote, I have never seen this level of cooperation and coordination in my time in electoral office, unquote. And about cooperation from Governor Kathy Hochul, Jeffries said, quote, I've never seen this sort of outreach when anyone was governor, even though they always indicated a willingness to be helpful to the congressional delegation, unquote. House Majority PAC announced in February a $45 million fund to elect Democrats in New York's congressional contest. Read more about this story at New York State of Politics. And read more about any of these stories in the WGXC newsroom at WGXC.org.
And I'm Tom Rowe with the WGXC weather update. And you've heard it before. Heavy rain and possible flash flooding is in the forecast. National Weather Service in Albany says Thursday there is a 30% chance of showers and thunderstorms, mainly after 2 p.m., and some storms could be severe with heavy rain. Otherwise, it'll be partly sunny during the day Thursday with a high of 85 and a low Thursday night around 67 with, again, a 70% chance of showers and thunderstorms Thursday night. Showers and thunderstorms are also possible on Friday. There's an 80% chance. Some of the storms, again, could produce heavy rain with a high of 82, south wind around 7 miles per hour spinning local windmills. Friday night, there's a low of 66 predicted and an 80% chance of showers, possibly a thunderstorm. Rainfall amounts could be heavy. Saturday, there's only a 30% chance of showers and thunderstorms after 2 p.m. Otherwise, it'll be partly sunny with a high of 84 and a low around 67. You're listening to the radio, WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, Hudson, solar-powered radio for open ears.
Wow, what a graduation.
I'll say.
But with college behind us, we'll need careers and good ones.
What about chestnut roasting? People always need chestnuts.
Or begging. I know a place that'll saw your legs off.
Slow down, fellas. I've got a way we can keep our legs and still have a bright future.
Now you're dreaming.
Oh, am I?
Of course! Nuclear power!
It's the job of tomorrow. Today!
Really?
Well, that settles it. For all those reasons and more, let us choose an electrifying career in nuclear power.
You're listening to the radio, WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, Hudson. You're listening during our summer silent pledge drive, where we're listening very closely to very occasional calls for your help in sustaining this radio station, this community media project, in all its forms. We're just trying to re-up the number of folks that we've lost as sustaining supporters over the last 6 months, so don't need too many people, but we need you this time to sign up, to do your share to help make sure community voices are on the air at 90.7 FM. All kinds of folks, from teenagers to senior citizens and everyone in between, telling their stories, playing their songs, and having a say on a community platform, a shared community conversation with participation encouraged and emphasized. That's what becoming a sustaining supporter is all about here at WGXC, and we hope that you want to step up and do your part at WGXC.org/donate or call 518-697-7400. WGXC.org/donate is the best way to become a sustaining supporter at WGXC.
Heather Bellows reports in the Berkshire Eagle that the State Department of Transportation workers began overhauling a dam between Carner Brook and Smiley's Pond in Ergmont. The Department of Fisheries and Wildlife and other agencies are working with the DOT to make it easier for wildlife to move between the two bodies of water in western Massachusetts. One local resident wearing a Turtleman t-shirt, Ari Zorn, could not be happier about the work to create ramps and other critters to move from the brook to the pond. For years, Zorn has been calling state and local officials, pestering them about the dead animals at the intersection of Route 23 and Mount Washington Road. Zorn also started a nonprofit, Friends of Smiley's Pond, to raise awareness of the problem and to promote the 33 endangered species, including plants and rare birds there. Zorn is happy about the local progress, saying, and I quote, "I fight for things that have no voice," end quote. Read more about this story in the Berkshire Eagle.
With your host, Randall Martin, and I am here with a good friend and good information raconteur, entrepreneur extraordinaire, Ari Zorn. How are you, my friend?
All right. How you doing?
I am well.
Happy to be on the show.
I am very well, and I'm glad that I could catch you because I know you're so busy and you do so much over there at the Berkshires. And before we get into the organization I want to talk about today, you just got a great honor from the governor, right, of Massachusetts. He was over, and you all the work that you had been doing down there with your environmental work. Tell our audience a little bit about that.
There's two little pieces to that. First of all, I was appointed to the Environmental Justice Advisory Council of Massachusetts by Governor Baker from a lot of the work I do with the environment, being mm-hmm. environmental conservation. And then the next one was the work I did at the pond here, once again, environmental conservation, got the state to put in a safe critter crossing, turtle crossing. I got the nickname Turtle Man for my work on the environment, and that was installed just recently. A feat that people told me that was impossible, that I could never do, but I worked with multiple organizations and separate groups, but I was a spearhead to it, you know? I mean, protecting the environment is as important it is as protecting each other.
And all of that now, when you go into Ergmont, and for the past previous like month or so, they've been doing all that construction, and is that part of that?
Yeah, so what actually allowed it to get done, so Smitty Pignatelli, State Rep Smitty Pignatelli, actually, I was on Spectrum News 1 about that achievement, but he was really an advocate for that. But yes, they're redoing the roads. I think it's the water lines here, the sidewalks, putting in bike paths, new lighting, and the timing of that in my project, you know, a good luck thing crossed. So they decided, the state decided to throw that piece in there. Is that while they were doing it, might as well not have to rip up roads again and bring in machinery again, that we might as well take care of this issue. So don't quote me on it, but I was told that a different project that was a fraction of this cost, of this project, cost $750,000. I was told that this could be at a minimum $1.5 million, most likely more, for the work that they had to do down there.
Wow. Wow. And what the work that you guys proposed and work that you were doing with the turtles and the critters down there, but like is critical.
Yeah, well, so the piece that I've always been an avid nature lover for a kid. I actually used nature to deal with my, when I was young, dealing with my relationship with race in this world. I could always tune into nature and feel safer. But that continued, and here I am now. But yeah, I came up with a way. This bridge and this dam is a role model for the state. So that meaning, this doesn't exist anywhere but here at Smiley's Pond in South Ergmont. This is a role model for the state. So if this whole project works out, this will be implemented statewide. And now if that goes well, it gets implemented nationwide, because as you may or may not know, many bridges and dams that we have are failing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's construction going on everywhere because these places are failing. The infrastructure is failing. And if you're going to have to redo them all, you might as well redo them right with the creatures in mind. I do have to say this, and I probably shouldn't say it, but I like being real.
Say it.
I am amazed at the lack of research that came from a lot of these departments, as if it was just an oversight and bureaucracy and red tape to just satisfy people, but pretend that you did the research, but you didn't really do the research.
Well, that's why it's important that people on the ground that are attuned to their local environments, you know, are willing to stand up. And this wasn't an instant thing. We talked about this. And this was a battle that and a project that you've had going for quite a long time for, you know, until action happened.
Yes, it's been a total battle. You know, it's funny. My wife was talking to me about it, and my mother, and I kept saying, "Wow, I'm so surprised." And they both just looked at me and said, "What are you talking about? You've been working at this for 4.5 years." And it's like, don't be surprised and act like it just happened. You made it happen. You know,
yes,
but I had
did.
To wrap my brain around that, because I'm a pretty humble guy. I look at things as like a team, a community, you know, and I just tend not to credit myself. I do what I do because I love it. I love the environment. We got to protect the environment in the same way we have to protect each other.
Absolutely. And absolutely. And speaking of that, you are a humble guy, and we gloss past, you know, I know you well, and we talk every time I see you. But for those who don't know you, and you do quite a bit in the Berkshires, and we're going to get to that. Why don't we recap? Give the people a little bit of history about you and your shop over there in Egremont. It's not your Egremont.
So wait, did you say give the history about my shop?
No, just you and what you've done for people who don't know who you are.
Wow, I don't even know how to start. you know, I moved to the Berkshires in 1992. I ended up buying Dos Amigos, a Mexican restaurant. I have a culinary arts degree and a hotel restaurant management degree. And I came out here to manage a restaurant. I ended up buying that restaurant. You know, so that's where my roots started in the Berkshires. After that, I ended up working at Eagleton School. You know, that's like a step kids, step 10. They're about to go off to prison or jail or
okay.
Who knows what. So, you know, I became an administrator, a director there. I also still own Zorn Core Fitness. I'm a personal trainer. And then on top of that, you know, as you know, Blackshires is an organization of mine. I am friends with Smiley's Pond. So, you know, my involvement in the community has always been deep. My wife and I have always run, you know, we're the ones running booster clubs for sports teams and all of that.
And you also own Divine.
Yeah, so I'm also Divine Retail Cannabis and CBD. And I have to say, you know, it was just a progression of things where that made sense, where we felt like we were perfect candidates for that. My wife is a chiropractor in town. So, you know, wellness has always been our thing, from how we eat to fitness to, you know, from chiropractic to your type of water. You know, you live out here and I'm surrounded by the streams and the ponds, and it's all about nature. It's all about a quality of life. It's all about a lifestyle to me. It's not just lifting weights. It's not just yoga. It's all of these things incorporated together, you know, about wellness. Now, the thing that has become, so this shop basically just represents who we are. You know, people keep congratulating us for what we've done, but it's kind of this progression of who we are, is what we've created. Like, I'm sitting here talking to you right now, and the stream, the Hubbard Brook is running behind me. You know, I mean, just nature and the healing power of nature is a huge piece of who we are. And once again, the plant, cannabis, it's a natural plant that grows from the earth,
mm-hmm.
and it is a very healing plant. Now, the thing that blows my mind that I didn't see coming about this, I saw Divine as a chip to be able to do all the things that you currently know that I do. All those things came to fruition before I even got the shop open,
mm-hmm.
which was surprising me. I thought I needed the money. In my mind, I told myself, once I get the money, I'll do all these things. But it was my drive, and I did all the things. I did all those things. All those achievements are here without the money. It kind of taught me something about us as humans, You know, when you just have a will and you have a desire and it means enough to you and you put your head down and put some passion into it, you get it done.
You know, and you're absolutely right. A lot of times we say, oh, we in our mind, we put all these other preliminary steps. I have to do this before this and this and that and this. And these artificial barriers, when really, if you focus and you move along sort of the path that life sets for you, you can achieve this because things fall into place. And even if you don't have all the necessary prerequisite resources, you know, life kind of finds a way.
Yes. I feel like in many ways this world is where it is because a lot of us have not done the right thing and stood up for what we believe in and collaborated together.
Well, you know,
this is why we are in the mess that we are in. Some people have the ability to sit back and just be so comfortable because their life could be cushy. Those tend to be the more educated people that could sit back and say, oh my God, isn't it terrible what's happening to these different groups of people, but I'm safe, so I'll stay back here while I'm safe.
Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now!, heard weekday mornings here at 8 o'clock on WGXC 90.7 FM. WGXC is hosting its pledge drive, and we need your support. Help keep hands-on creative community radio alive in your region by calling 518-697-7400. That's 518-697-7400. Or you can pledge online with your tax-deductible pledge at wgxc.org/donate. That's wgxc.org/donate. Help WGXC meet its goal and keep local, national, and international news broadcasting in Greene and Columbia counties. Thanks so much.
Take two.
The Athens Cultural Center is pleased to host the third Saturday's free film series at the Athens Riverfront Park along the Hudson River. Join us on the third Saturday of each month, May through September, for a stellar movie lineup with notable guests. Screenings begin at sunset, but get there early to enjoy thematic specialty cocktails from the Stewart House's River Grill and settle in with friends on the lawn. Visit athensculturalcenter.org for more information, including this year's featured films. Third Saturday's free film series is made possible by Create Council on the Arts, the Fair Games Arts Grant, and the Stewart House Tavern and River Grill. See you this summer!
Welcome to 2023 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
We'll stand for liberty and freedom today, tomorrow, and for as long as it takes!
President Joe Biden was in Lithuania Wednesday after the NATO summit and vowed to not waver in support for Ukraine. Ukrainian President Vladimir Zelensky pressed NATO for a timeline for when Ukraine could join, but NATO nations say it cannot happen until Russia ends its war. Zelensky was pledged additional security assistance by the U.S. and other G7 nations. FBI Director Christopher Wray fielded hours of questions from lawmakers on the House Judiciary Committee relating to the credibility of the Bureau. Florida Republican Representative Matt Gaetz read a text message from Hunter Biden to FBI Director Wray and asked if he was protecting the Bidens.
Absolutely not. The FBI does not have any interest in protecting anyone politically.
That's a shakedown, and everybody knows why you won't answer it.
Wray, who was appointed by former President Donald Trump, seemed to have received some aid from Democrats by defending the Bureau's actions and condemning Trump's handling of classified documents. House Republicans and Democrats began debating the 2024 National Defense Authorization Act and the approximately 1,500 amendments to the bill filed by lawmakers. House Speaker Kevin McCarthy is expected to face pressure from conservatives to strip away Biden-era military policies on paying for travel costs, allowing gender-affirming treatments, and permitting troops to seek abortions. House Democratic Caucus Chair Pete Aguilar of California says the details of the bill are going to matter.
I plan to support NDAAs, present and future, but it's got to be the right proposals. But ultimately, each member is going to have to make that decision.
Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell condemned white supremacy following Republican Alabama Senator Tommy Tuberville's latest appearance on CNN, where he seemed to double down on his position relating to white nationalism, saying, if someone wants to call them white nationalists, to me, is an American. McConnell countered, saying white supremacy simply will not be tolerated.
You know, white supremacy is simply unacceptable in the military and in our whole country.
In a radio interview earlier this year, Tuberville expressed similar views about white nationalists serving in the military. Finally, Democrat West Virginia Senator Joe Manchin is preparing to headline a no-labels event in New Hampshire as speculation circulates about a third-party presidential run.
How do we help the process, the political process that we have, do what it's supposed to? That's to have common sense discussions to find out what the American people would like to see accomplished.
In a statement, Manchin said it's clear that most Americans are exceedingly frustrated by the growing divide in our political parties and toxic political rhetoric from our elected leaders. I'm Alex Gonzalez for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our HRS indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. The American Confidence in Elections Act sounds harmless enough, but cloaked in the bill introduced Monday in the U.S. House is an effort to nationalize mail-in voting restrictions modeled by Florida, Georgia, Texas, and other voter suppression states. The Omnibus ACE Act bill includes text from 50 bills previously introduced in the House, fueled by 2020 election disinformation. Among its scores of provisions are nationwide restrictions on mail-in voting and drop boxes, changes to the Real ID system, and new voter access restrictions in the District of Columbia. It provides funding for state-level post-election audits, but outlaws private foundation funding for election administration without adding badly needed federal support. Aiming to keep the special interest money flowing, the bill would codify the elimination of aggregate individual campaign donation limits following the Supreme Court's 2014 McCutcheon decision, and it directs the IRS not to enforce rules on 501c nonprofits engaging in political activity and not disclosing donors, one of the dark money tools used to hide political contributions for special interests. While it's not likely to pass the U.S. Senate, it's an alarming reminder of how suppression in the name of election integrity is being wielded to keep eligible Americans of color, new Americans, the elderly and disabled, students, Native Americans, and others from the polls. We have a link to the bill text at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
I'm Tom Rowe in Acre with WGXC Flora and Fauna Report, listening in on what's been happening lately with the plants and animals at Wave Farm. The story of the week has been the rain at Wave Farm, and lots of it. It has brought down nuts from the shagbark hickory trees, early green soft versions, and it has sprouted mushrooms throughout the Wave Farm forest. There are mushrooms coming up everywhere now that the ground is good and moist. And it is good and moist, isn't it? We also have milkweed for the local monarch butterflies. Shoulder height at some points. You can hear some of the birds in the background, some of the water flowing in the foreground, some of the occasional traffic on Route 23 at Wave Farm, where we've got open hours on Saturdays from noon to 6 p.m. if you want to come out and tour the Wave Farm Art Park and see the art installations. I'm wrote in Acre, looking into the WGXC community calendar, where there are so many things that you can do in person or virtually. And if you are organizing a local event, you too can add an event to the calendar. Just go to WGXC.org, click on the community calendar, and then click on add an event. And then you can just type in the information in the fields provided. And soon enough, folks like me are reading your announcement on the radio at on 90.7 FM, and folks around the world see it in the community calendar at WGXC.org. On Thursday, July 13th, the Hudson Thursday Market returns in the public square in Hudson. That's between Columbia and Warren Street at 7th Street, with all sorts of vendors from all sorts of local farms. Abby Lappin leads movement and music story time at the Hudson Area Library Thursday, July 13th from 4 to 5 p.m.
There is the Thursday night lecture series at the Eldridge Research Center in Rensselaerville on July 13th from 6 to 8 p.m. Craig Frank, a PhD with an associate professor and environmental science co-director at Fordham University, is speaking about the recovery of the little brown bat populations in New York. 6 to 8 p.m. Thursday, July 13th. Also, the Summer and Smoke drama written by Tennessee Williams is performed at Bethany Hall in Kingston. Spamalot starts at the Bridge Street Theater in Catskill Thursday, July 13th, 7:30 to 9:30 p.m. It runs all weekend, Friday, Saturday, and there is a matinee on Sunday. Friday, July 14th, there's a community spaghetti dinner at the American Legion in Greenville from 4:30 to 7 p.m. There's Art in the Barn, a Saugerties artist studio tour at all sorts of Saugerties locations Friday, July 14th from 5 to 7 p.m. As You Like It is performed with a live folk rock music soundtrack at the Catskill Mountain Foundation Friday, July 14th at 7:30. The bands White Hills, Bitter Wish, and Century Plants perform at the Avalon Lounge in Catskill Friday, July 14th, with a live web stream from the Avalon Lounge at wgxc.org/listen and a live broadcast, too, from 8 to 10 p.m. Saturday, July 15th, there is Rhythm in Nature Community Listening Lab at the PS21 in Chatham with the legendary jazz drummer Susie Ibarra. Also Jake Landau, and the Rhythm in Nature Residency as the listening lab. There's a community care clinic, 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. at the Hudson Area Library, where you can find out about Narcan, acupressure, herbal medicines, seeds, ear acupuncture, and more. The Catskill Saturday Ukulele Jam is Saturday, July 15th, 1:30 to 3 p.m. at the Catskill United Methodist Church. The Aldo Lavaggi Trio, Dust Bowl Fairies, and the Hudson Festival Orchestra perform at Henry Hudson Riverfront Park Saturday, July 15th from 5 to 9 p.m. And there are Crystal Radio Sessions Saturday, July 15th at the Ankrum Opera House at 7:30 p.m. These events and many more are on the WGXC community calendar online at wgxc.org. All right, you are tuned into the radio WGXC 90.7 FM, and we are now joined on the phone by songwriter Jennifer Jackson, who is coming to town for several shows, two in Catskill on Thursday and Friday. One we'll have on the radio, too, here at WGXC. Jennifer, can you hear us?
Yes, I can. Hi, Tom.
We hear you, too. Thank you for joining us today. Where are you calling from today? Whoop, you broke up there. What was the city?
It's called Dennis, Massachusetts.
Ah.
And we had a show here Sunday. Can you hear me?
I can, yes.
Okay. We had a show here on Sunday, and so we're going to be traveling up tomorrow to do the shows in the Hudson Valley.
And have you been on tour a while, or is this the beginning or the end?
No, it's just a short 5-show run, so it's just about a week. I'll be heading back to Texas on Sunday.
You're from Austin, so you're heading back into the heat, I guess.
Unfortunately, yes. That's going to be going on for the next few months.
Well, it hasn't been much of a break up here. I guess it's been it's cooler than Texas, though, up here, right?
Yeah, it's been pretty nice here, and where I'm staying right now is right near the ocean, so it's very nice.
Ah.
Yeah.
Well, tell people who don't know who Jennifer Jackson is what to expect if they want to come out to the shows. Are Spike's Record Rack at 2 p.m. on Thursday, and at Left Bank Ciders at 8 p.m. on Friday, and then there's another show Saturday?
The Left Bank show is at 7 o'clock. And the Saturday house concert is also at 7 o'clock, and that's in New Paltz, New York.
So what will what kind of it seems like you play all styles of music, sort of.
The styles kind of vary, and I play the guitar and sing, and I'll be joined by my bandmate John Notre Thomas, who also plays acoustic guitar and sings harmonies with me. And my writing, pretty spans the gamut of folk, 60s pop, bossa nova, old-fashioned country, and then some, more south of the border sounds.
Like Mexican or?
I do a lot of covers that are old Mexican boleros. And I've written a couple of songs somewhat in that style. I've been doing it a long time, so some of my influences have shifted over the years, but I think a common thread is I try to write very melodically, and I really enjoy harmonies. So, for example, my bandmate John will be singing on pretty much everything with me. And it's pretty mellow, I would say. It's not bombastic.
And have your shifting influences been, has that been affected by your location? Because you've lived in a couple different places.
Yeah, I think it has, Tom. I think, although not completely, I think I've always enjoyed a lot of the styles that I told you about. But living in Texas, where I've been for about 14 years, has maybe made me write a bit more in an old-fashioned country style, because for years I was in Texas, I was singing in a band that did a lot of those old duets from the 40s and 50s and 60s. So that probably seeped into my writing a little bit more. So I would say that the geography has some effect on it.
But you never lived in Brazil to get did the bossa nova come in Italy, or how did that, where does that influence?
I did get into bossa nova more when I lived in Italy. I've never lived in Brazil. And it's just a style that resonates with me and just feels natural for me to play in that style. I guess my intro to it was when I lived over in Italy.
Is it Brazilian? I'm just thinking, like, bossa nova is associated with Brazil, but where do you know the origination of bossa nova?
Yeah, I think it does come from Brazil. Tom Jobim is known as the kind of the king of it, and I think it was just a more gentle Latin rhythm as opposed to the samba, which was the more just the more upbeat Brazilian rhythm, and maybe some influence of jazz in the 1960s when he was writing that stuff.
And it seems like the Italians would at least be interested in bossa nova, if not participants.
Yeah, it was much more common there than it was in Massachusetts, where I had moved from, so at least in those days.
So I wanted to ask, how is it as a independent musician, post-COVID 19 era, touring in this country?
Well, I'm really just getting back into it now, Tom. I had to like most people I know, I had to cancel a lot of tours and performances that I had scheduled. And then was trying to ease back into things. And so far, I haven't been on the road the way I used to be before COVID. I'm doing little stints like this where it's a week or 10 days. But I'm not getting in the car yet and driving from Texas all the way up here and playing all the way along the way. Not that I couldn't. I think it's just been slow for me and maybe others just getting into the mindset of being in crowds again and big gatherings like that again. But I feel like it's coming back. In Austin, the clubs are all full again, and I don't know how it is up in New York. You'd know better, but I think things are sort of getting back to normal now.
Yeah, it doesn't necessarily feel like exactly normal, but it seems more like it than it was before, right?
It's
hard to use the word normal again, but it is closer to what it was before, I think.
Yeah, I think it is.
But you haven't encountered, because I've heard anecdotal stories of like venues more and more trying to take a percentage of merch sales, and it just being economically kind of more and more difficult to tour.
Ooh, that I don't know. When I tour, I try to base it mostly on house concerts, because that's what I learned years ago. If you try to play in venues and you're not really well known, you can't demand any kind of a guarantee, and it doesn't work out financially to do it. But if you play house concerts, it's usually someone that you know, and they invite all their friends, and so you get a little bit of an immediate audience. You can make some money doing it.
Yeah, and I guess your hosts are less often indifferent, right? Whoops.
Sorry?
The Thursday shows at Spike's Record Rack on Main Street in Catskill. We all heard about the Left Bank show, and then the Saturday night show is in New Paltz, and you should go to Jennifer's website, jenniferjackson.com, and contact her through there to find out the house party location. If you're interested in that. And the show at Spike's Record Rack is going to be broadcast live on the radio, too, so you can, if you're stuck at work or something, you can hear the show and then come down to the Left Bank Cider the next day and see Jennifer in person. Thank you, Jennifer Jackson, for calling in today. We'll be listening to you tomorrow at 2 p.m. live from Spike's Record Rack on the radio at WGXC. Thanks, Jennifer.
Stay tuned to WGXC 90.7 FM Wednesday, July 12th for all sorts of great programming during our Summer Silent Pledge Drive. At 10 a.m., it's time for Modern Jet Set with brand new music from Rahil, Dubmatics, and Atmosphere. Maria Manhattan is in the Hudson Studio at 11 a.m. with the Hudson Cafe. Then we head to Catskill with Spike Priggen and the Bedazzled Radio Hour for 2 hours at noon. 3 p.m., the Radio Survivor Show talks about the latest in radio news. And at 4 p.m. on the WGXC Afternoon Show, we'll hear from musician Jennifer Jackson, who's making two stops in Catskill the next 2 days for performances. We'll hear from Larry Federman about the Ramshorn Livingston Sanctuary in Catskill. We'll hear from members of the Waterfall Unity Alliance about Native American history in Schoharie Valley. And we'll hear the WGXC Congressional Report, tracking the latest news from the 18th, 19th, 20th, and 21st congressional districts. Then at 7 p.m., we're live from Brooklyn with Off the Hook, simulcast live from WBAI in New York City. And at 8 p.m., we're live from the Avalon Lounge in Catskill with performances from singer-songwriters Mary Claire, Leah Thomas, and Bridge Gamble. And then at 10 p.m., we're live from ACRA with Nighttime with Christopher Michael Hefner on 90.7 FM WGXC.
Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
We're joined this morning by Todd Fabozzi, who is the Director of Sustainability for many years, almost three decades, at the Capital District Regional Planning Commission. And a while back, I heard Todd make a presentation to the South End Community Collaborative about a new EPA grant coming down to work on climate. But I thought we'd ask Todd maybe to explain some of the things that the Capital District Regional Planning Commission is doing, starting particularly with the climate focus.
Well, thank you, Mark. Glad to be on your show. Yes, it's 30 years now for me working in urban planning and regional planning, although I didn't have the title of Director of Sustainability for quite that long, and started out in early days here at CDRPC developing geographic information systems so we could start to document the land use patterns in the capital region and look at the issues around sprawl and smart growth. And that was a focus of my work for a long time. I think that's when I first ran into you, Mark. I actually was invited to one of your classes at RPI many years ago to make a presentation on that. And that work, along with water quality planning work, particularly watershed planning, in which we were using GIS, geographic information systems, and incorporating land use and smart growth ideas into watershed planning, were kind of the frameworks that I built off of and our organization built off of to be able to start to position ourselves to think more broadly about sustainability. And at the same time, more and more understanding started to grow in the general public, and the science started to expand around the understandings of climate change and the framework for understanding how land use and buildings, how we get a lot around in our vehicles, what we do with our waste, how we treat open space, and all of these various aspects of things that are built into smart growth and watershed planning, but also very much play into understanding the issues around climate change. And really, let's just say the two major ways of looking at climate change, which is the mitigation side of planning, which is just what we're going to try to do as a society to reduce our carbon dependence and carbon footprint. And then also the resilience side of climate action, which is just to be prepared as much as possible for the effects of climate change. And if anyone's been watching the news, you've seen a lot of those issues starting to play out with extreme flooding and fires and those kinds of things. And so CDRPC has been the recipient of two major state program grants, and those are programs that I manage. And one of them is called Clean Energy Communities, and that's funded through NYSERDA. And then the second program is Climate Smart Community Outreach Coordinator Services, and that's funded through DC. And those two programs are complementary, and we at CDRPC, although our core area covers four counties, which is Rensselaer, Saratoga, Albany, and Schenectady counties, but we also provide services for different programs at different scales. And for those two programs, we actually provide that program support across 28 counties, across four different regions in New York State, which includes the Capital Region, includes the Hudson Valley, includes Mohawk Valley, and includes the North Country. And so we have been working, the NYSERDA Clean Energy Community Program, we've been working on for over 7 years now. And we have a team of outreach coordinators that work through the regional agencies in those regions, and some private consulting firms that provide higher technical support to our team, to be able to work with municipalities to get them to work on various high impact actions. This is what NYSERDA calls the different clean energy actions that we help communities with. Things like looking at their municipal fleets and converting them to electric vehicles, and looking at the infrastructure for fleets, for electric fleets, looking at buildings and conversions to heat pumps and better insulation, and looking at renewable energy sources and how to get communities to tie into things like solar, community solar or their own solar systems, as just some of the examples. And then with the DC Climate Smart Community Outreach Coordinator Services, some of the complementary things we do in that program and help communities with is Climate Smart Certification. There's a certification program where there's a series of actions that count for points. And if you reach certain point thresholds, you can become certified at different levels. And it's really a recognition program, a leadership recognition program for communities. It's become very popular in New York, and we help communities get through, navigate that program, but also help them with their own local climate action planning. And now, the climate action planning, go ahead.
Yeah, well, sorry. One of the things I was going to mention, you know, United Nations head is, you know, saying that governments are not moving fast enough to avoid, you know, the 1.5 degrees, you know, target for global warming. Are there particular initiatives that some of the local municipalities have taken over years that, you know, you particularly would point to as something that really has moved the bar at the speed that needs to be moved?
Well, it's hard for me to say at the speed that needs to be moved, but it's moved the bar, I would say, within the realm of the capacity of local government as it currently stands. And so what we're trying to do, because both the Clean Energy Community and Climate Smart Community programs are voluntary programs, there is incentives, or there are incentives. So, for example, in the Clean Energy Community program, if communities become designated, if they achieve certain actions, they get grant funding to be able to implement clean energy projects. And there's been lots of different projects implemented over throughout the whole state because the whole state participates in this program but not every community, but a lot of communities. And you can visit NYSERDA's website and see the communities that have participated. There's a map in the Clean Energy Community Program page that shows the communities' actions that they've taken. You know, the idea is we are trying to get communities to do as much as they have the capacity to do.
What's the new EPA grant going to do?
Okay, so the new program that we have is around climate action planning. And though we have been working with communities on climate action planning at the local level through Climate Smart Community Program, either climate action planning with their local government operations or with the community at large, this new EPA program, which is the Climate Pollution Reduction Grant Program, has provided the Capital Region specifically, in this case, just the 8-county Capital Region, will be doing a climate action plan. So we'll be working on a climate action plan in which we will be looking for broad participation by stakeholders, municipalities, and others in the region that have an interest in climate action planning. And we will be developing a plan in two phases. We'll be doing the first plan is due March 1st. We start it in August of 2023, and then it's due March 1st of 2024. And then we do a full greenhouse gas emissions inventory update. We have one right now that's available that we did previously, but we'll be updating that. And we'll be working off that, setting goals and targets and projections for being able to line up communities to get funding. There's going to be a competitive grant funding aspect to this announced this fall. And communities will point to the plan that we put together in the first phase as part of making their projects competitive. And we'll be working with communities to identify those projects. And then we'll be working in the second year on a comprehensive climate action plan that looks at all the sectors and looks for ways to reduce the greenhouse gas footprint in those sectors. So it's a mitigation plan and looking at ways to reduce our carbon footprint in the Capital Region.
Now, we only have a minute left, so I'm going to ask you a two-part question. I understand the new EPA grant, you know, usually you work a lot with the government municipalities. This is going to involve, you know, some broader community participation. And in general, people want to find out more what the Capital District Regional Planning Commission is doing around climate. How best can they find that information? In 45 seconds.
Well, right now, yeah, the best way right now would be to, you could contact me directly, todd@cdrpc.org. todd@cdrpc.org. And we will be building out under this program some more public-facing information, such as a greenhouse gas inventory dashboard. We'll be tracking the community's greenhouse gas footprint and being able to tell and answer, for example, more specifically, your first question about how we're achieving the various goals. Most of the goals we've been focused on in the other two programs are built around the state's goals and setting those goals locally within local climate action plans. So we'll be able to track then how we're progressing over time, and we'll have that set up at cdrpc.org, our website.
Thank you very much. We've been talking with Todd Fabozzi, the Director of Sustainability of the Capital District Regional Planning Commission. And this has been Mark Dunley for the Hudson Mohawk Magazine.
That interview was from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
I'm Tom Rowe in Acre with the WGXC News Update. Go to the WGXC Newsroom at WGXC.org for more information about any of these stories. Lena Bellamy reports in the Times Union that Metro North Railroad resumed rail service in both directions along the Hudson River with a few schedule modifications after damaging floods suspended several routes. Governor Kathy Hochul said, quote, "The trains are back," unquote, July 12th at the Grand Central Terminal in Manhattan. Flash flooding moved trees and heavy boulders onto parts of the tracks, and rain washed out others in the Hudson Valley after severe storms July 9th and 10th. Metro North temporarily suspended service to make repairs. On July 12th, just five trains were canceled, and the Newburgh Beacon Ferry service also resumed. Amtrak also returned service between New York City and Albany on July 12th. Read more about this story in the Times Union. New York State of Politics reports that Representative Pat Ryan says it will take some time to clean up all the damage from storms this week that left one woman dead. The lower Hudson Valley, including much of Ryan's 18th congressional district, were hit hard by the storms on July 9th and 10th. He said, quote, "West Point, where I went to school, and the surrounding areas were the epicenter of the entire storm. In just a few hours, they had over 8 inches of rain, which normally takes an entire season or summer to fall. The area was absolutely overwhelmed. There are several larger senior apartment complexes, one in particular, where almost all the seniors are without a home, many for potentially months. That's the thing. This is not going to be a quick cleanup. We are in it for the long haul," unquote. And while West Point is asking the Army Corps of Engineers for help, the Federal Emergency Management Agency will help others. And Ryan says he's, quote, "marshaling the full force and power of the federal government to get recovery dollars. We are assessing the damage now. It's going to be significant, tens of millions of dollars, if not more, in damages to bridges, roads, homes, and businesses," unquote. Read more about this story at New York State of Politics. Luke Parsonow reports for New York State of Politics that New York Governor Kathy Hochul estimates the state will spend $35 million to clean up the heavy storms that wreaked havoc on the lower Hudson Valley July 9th and 10th. Hochul said, quote, "We are aggressively doing the calculations of the cost right now. We'll get those submitted to the federal government, and I can anticipate reimbursements with help with this cleanup as well," unquote. Hochul said New York will apply for a disaster declaration and reimbursement from the federal government, quote, "and I know that sometimes takes weeks to do," unquote. Read more about this story at New York